The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis Podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show. In this episode, we're going to be hearing from Trava Carlson, a PhD candidate in philosophy at the Institute for Christian Studies and the Vrije Universiteit in Amsterdam. Trava will be sharing some of the context for a paper that he recently presented at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Trava's paper was Reveiling the Secret, Reading the Ransom Trilogy as Spiritual Exercise. Given that the focus of this show is Lewis's science fiction trilogy, you may want to have a revisit of the episodes that we recorded with Professor Alistair McGrath on these books, Out of the Silent Planet, Perelandra, and That Hideous Strength. I'll make sure that I include links to these shows in the show notes. Trava, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, before we explore your connection with C.S. Lewis, which is obviously the focus of this show, I just want to hear a little bit about the context of your studies. Would you share maybe some of the focus of your PhD research and why you particularly wanted to home in on these areas that you're studying?
Absolutely. So my PhD research comes out of practical interests from teaching, especially at a Christian school. And some of it was came out of the crucible of COVID, where we had to move online. And the question was, how does one be a Christian teacher in and answer the calling to shape students toward greater unity with Christ? How does one answer the calling of a teacher to shape people toward a more ethical consciousness, so on and so forth? So my PhD research focuses on spiritual growth and transformation, which those are all terms in themselves, but basically in terms of material circumstances, how to develop a more ethical consciousness, a consciousness that is open to listening to another, open to doing acts of love and service and hospitality to others. And part of the way I think we can do that is by looking back to the Middle Ages, a time before a lot of our modern constructions of society, the way we organize ourselves, the way we think of ourselves, when those were all under different models, we see people teaching and doing things in a unique way that the more we look into them really do challenge us to consider our own way of organizing and doing things. So I'm looking to ways of doing things in the Middle Ages and then asking what we can do to apply those to present education and present educational communities. What can we learn? Can we implement things from them? And what might be effective?
And how did this lead to you specifically looking at C.S. Lewis's work?
Absolutely. So funny enough, it was actually, it was a friend that pointed me to the conference. I've known about C.S. Lewis. I'm sort of like Michael Ward's story, like a lot of people's stories. Having grown up in Christianity, my parents read the Chronicles of Narnia to me, and it was an absolute delight. We did that more than once. What got me into this conference was actually noticing the similarity between Lewis's work as a medievalist and his interest in pedagogy. And it was Jason M. Baxter's book, The Medieval Mind. I think it's The Medieval Mind of C.S. Lewis or something along those lines. And he talks, there's this lovely chapter, and I think it's called Evil Enchantment, I think it is. And it talks about, and I think it's in The Weight of Glory, where Lewis talks about the need to break a spell. And it's a spell that basically makes materiality or the world, the creation we live in, just look like resource or just look like what it is. And he talks about how basically one can use words to try to break, you know, another spell or a story to try to break the spell. And as this was kind of the road into me realizing that, oh, like there is... this is actually a sort of similar interest I have as far as the use of medieval allegory or stories, because that's what I was doing myself in my own research. And I actually ended up, one of my chapters in my dissertation is on the same, one of the same texts that Lewis loved, which is Bernard Sylvestris's Cosmographia, although he uses a different, its Latin name, or a different name, for that text. So anyhow, so Lewis thought that these medieval works were stories such that they could break this or have a counterspell, as it were, to shape our vision in such a way that we can see this depth or this teeming of life, to use the words of Ransom and the at the end of The Silent Planet, to help transform our vision of each other, of society, of the world. And so I was very excited when I saw somebody had a similar idea to me, and somebody so great as Lewis is such a prolific knowledge and writing ability to write and communication style. So this got me into diving deeper as sort of a scholarly role model, whereas before he'd been sort of a faith role model, given that I had read his works at Christian school. Like my parents had read his Chronicles of Narnia to me. So he'd always kind of been there, but this is a new relationship I'm having with him as a scholar.
This might be a really hard question to answer, but have you got a favorite book or quotation or work of Lewis? And if so, is there a particular reason why you would perhaps choose that as your favorite?
Yeah. So do I have a particularly favorite quote? The section that I think just when I read it and out of the silent, and this is why I chose the space, or I shouldn't say the space trilogy. Michael Ward said that that is a, what did he say? That that's anathema, and that we would be cast into outer darkness if anybody ever called it the space trilogy. So the cosmic trilogy or Ransom trilogy, one of the reasons why I chose it is because it just has this, it captures all this theory of reading and how reading can transform us and transform our visions in a very concrete material way, which I think we see in That Hideous Strength specifically. But this beautiful view of the heavens teeming with life, right? And it's in chapter 5 of Out of the Silent Planet, where Ransom has his first encounter. And there's actually another beautiful encounter where he reiterates this near the end of Out of the Silent Planet as well. And I just love that whole section. Page numbers are kind of irrelevant since we all have many different editions, but it's not too long after the beginning of the chapter. But I just love the use of Milton's poetry in the middle of this discussion of life teeming in the heavens, and that Ransom is just so overwhelmed that he returns glory to God. And it's something that's poetically moving as far as the aesthetics of the passage. It's philosophically moving as far as how materiality can transform in front of our eyes and we can see it's the depth of its being. It's theologically moving and how God works through the cosmos and can reach us in the vision of light that hits our eyes, as Lewis talks about in The Discarded Image. So that has to be, for me, it captures so much of Lewis's historical work, his philosophical work, theological work, and even pedagogical work and apologetic work with regard to his belief in how texts can train our imagination and open us up to what God has for us and how God meets us in even the most everyday moments of our lives.
Do you feel like reading Lewis has changed your perspective on a particular issue, or perhaps transformed the way you think about something?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a good discussion in my research around, if you're doing research on how reading transforms you, it's not just a theoretical matter. In order to do the research about how reading transforms, you have to also read and in the process be transformed. So I have the privilege of not having to divide theory and practice, because my theory is already in practice when I am working it out. And what I think Lewis did, especially in the Cosmic Trilogy or Ransom Trilogy, since that's the one I've worked more with in my scholarly work, but also just personally, is that it does train our imagination. He does in things like Surprised by Joy and, of course, the Chronicles of Narnia. He's training us through story to see something that's very real. And it's real in the story, and it's the reality that we can also encounter in the world outside of, you know, outside of the story as well. Because I think there's an actual correlation there. So as far as being transformed, I do believe I've had my imagination trained through spending time, especially with the Cosmic Trilogy. And that was part of my hunger. I was just in a period where I love these medieval allegories, but I also want things as well that, like Lewis calls himself, I can't remember which essay it's in, but he calls himself a translator of these historical thoughts. And I think he does actually do quite a good job at that, especially in bringing the medieval components into a present usage or present grammar, as it were, if we can analogize the images and content with words. And I believe I do really think that I've had a greater sense of meeting God in everyday life and in the material world through not just reading the Ransom Trilogy once, but reading it multiple times and sitting with it and using it as, like I argue, spiritual exercise. So that's just some of the great blessing I have to do the research I do and to have a role model like Lewis who can show me how it's done and to be and to just benefit from treating him how he asks his works to be treated.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. Why do you think C.S. Lewis is still relevant 60 odd years after his death?
I think Lewis is relevant because of how he invites us to consider the world, inviting us into this cosmic model of longing and being moved and moving each other and the world together. So I think he's an expert in translating that as well as both in his scholarly work and in his work of fiction.
Trevor, do you have any idea what Lewis's legacy might be in another 50 years from now?
Absolutely. I think Lewis's legacy, and this is something as a medievalist, I would say looking with a long view to history, in that things from periods far past can continue to speak to us, especially when they have something to gift each generation. And I think in Lewis tapping into that gift that he receives from the Middle Ages, we also then, through his translation, continue to receive that gift that he received, but also then in his own way of putting it. So I think with regard to his fiction and with regard to his scholarly works and his essays, that he's continuing to package this in a sense that was relevant to his own generation, but then also in using these timeless images in ways that continue to be meaningful for us as we sit with them, unpack them, and spend time with Lewis and what he gave us.
Do you think Lewis would have any advice for our 21st century world?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing, and this is something that is that weighs on me as well, is with regard to seeing the world as teeming with life, as a cosmos as heavens or a space as heavens, to see the world as enchanted and enchanted in the sense of having its own sort of longing, that we're all a part of something that has a depth. And of course, that depth is resting in God, is resting in Christ as we rest in Christ. And this then moves to what he said at the end of The Weight of Glory, that that first of all, that creation has this weight, but also that besides the Holy Sacrament, the most holy thing that we'll be able to see in flesh is our neighbor who is next to us. So I think his continuing relevance for us right now is to open up our sense of wonder, our sense of holiness, and our sense of being a part of community with each other, rather than just viewing the world and each other as resource or something to be used.
You mentioned that you grew up with the Narnia Chronicles and that you grew up in a church context. Your parents were Christians. Do you feel like any of Lewis's works have played a significant role in your faith journey at all?
Yeah, I think so. I think to have it go back, because I think this is also important too. When we grow up within a community, our imaginations are, as it were, attuned to the frequency of that community, and to have, again, like a Christian family of parents who themselves enjoy the Chronicles of Narnia. My grandmother came to faith through mere Christianity, and that's very much a part of Lewis is very much a part of our family's faith story in that way. And she's just a very voracious reader. So I grew up talking with her about Lewis. But I think the thing that gets really deep into the soul is having this, again, with my imagination as a child encounter sort of the delight and the wonder that comes through the world of the Chronicles of Narnia. And even if at a young age, I didn't have the symbolic vocabulary I have now through researching medieval topics, like I said in my paper, they're enriching, but it's not necessary to get the depth of the transformation and the work on the imagination. So I think having that basis established as a child allowed me, I think, I'm trying to talk up Lewis rather than my own capacity for imagination, but I do think, and I would argue that what it does is it opens us up to seeing wonder in the world, seeing where God's moving in the world, and seeing the world as, although a delight in its measurable sense, but a real wonder and a real depth in its sense, in the sense of its being and what it works as together. So I do think that the Chronicles of Narnia and reading that multiple times with my parents as a child definitely did, I think, give me a taste and a hunger for wonder and a taste for what gives that the materiality its depth. So I would venture that.
And is that something that's just kept going as you've read more of Lewis, do you think?
Yes, I would say so. So yeah, the sense of imagination that I was blessed to get through the Chronicles of Narnia, or the way in which my hunger for wonder was being trained or built up, I believe that was something that needed to be nourished. And it was also nourished through Tolkien. I've been a long reader of Tolkien as well. And I was more acquainted with the philosophical Lewis as I got a little older. So in my Christian school, in my last year of high school, we read Mere Christianity as an apologetic work. So we unpacked its arguments. And in college, I took some philosophy classes, in one of which we did an analysis of his book, Miracles. But I think the hunger for wonder brought this present capacity, I think, that I'm working in as a medievalist, back into his philosophical side, and married those, because I think they were it's easy to separate the different Lewises, because there are people do, and I think it's helpful in certain circumstances, differentiate between, you know, the apologetic Lewis or the theological Lewis or the, I don't know, creative or imaginative Lewis. And I think actually they're really all together, and sometimes they just have different expressions. But I do think through his different works, with that hunger for wonder that I was getting from the Chronicles of Narnia, in interacting with his different works as I've matured, have continued to increase that hunger and give it various new ways of expressing itself.
If you could ask Lewis one question, what would it be?
Oh, boy.
Just a little one for you.
The one question I would ask of Lewis is, what is the richest image that he has sat with? Because I think that is a bit of, on one level, information that would be interesting, but it's something that would continue to give, and for him, that gave for a lifetime. I have a venture that it might be something about Christ the Word or Christ as wisdom, something in those, but it might also, because he saw it in other works of fiction and in literature outside of Christianity, that could be another image. So I would be very interested to know what image was most rich or most meaningful, or one that he liked to sit with throughout his life. And I think that would be one that would continue to give for other lifetimes beyond his own.
Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos, and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.